Hello and welcome to the 44 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1 Baseball Podcast. Where you been all my life, boys? Gosh, it's been too long. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney III, out of Newtown Square, Pennsylvania, joined by the great Kendall J. Rogers, also joined by a man celebrating his 29th birthday, Aaron Fitzy. Yeah. Happy birthday, baby.
Yeah, for the 10th year in a row, baby, it's 29. I love it.
10th anniversary of your 29th birthday. It's a day that must be celebrated. Where are we going for dinner tonight, Fitzy?
We're going to a new place downtown Durham called Jack Tar and the Colonel's Daughter. I've never been. Heard good things. I'll give you a full report next week.
It better be good with a name like that.
Yeah, that's a good name.
The name is strong. Because we know, Fitzy, Durham is a hipster town. On the 20 to 80 hipster scale, this establishment, based on the reviews, is a what?
I mean, based on the name alone and the fact that it's supposed to be in some, I don't know, some retrofitted building or some such thing. I'm guessing it's at least a 7 on a 2-8 scale. It sounds pretty hipster to me.
That's right. The Durhamites can do hipster with anybody. Oh. Pabst Blue Ribbon for all my men.
That's right.
Come on now. So speaking of potential sponsors, gentlemen, let's talk about an actual sponsor. PBR, the hipster beer, is not a sponsor yet, but we are brought to you by Driveline and our good friends at Driveline Baseball. Driveline offers a variety of training, education, software, and hardware solutions for players and coaches. Coaches, I'm guessing you're fairly overwhelmed by all the different things that today's baseball analytics involved. You are collecting different data sources, mass athlete programming, third-party analytic insights. Here's what you do. You call or you email into support@drivelinebaseball.com. That's support@drivelinebaseball.com. Get yourself set up with your own custom player development bundle. On Driveline's track platform, you can look into Driveline certification that'll empower you to run Driveline type training, pitch design, and or biomechanical data collection with products like Modus. We appreciate our friends at Driveline very much. The only thing I don't appreciate is how many four-syllable words are in the read, but hey, that's the world of analytics. I'm just going to have to be better. That's what it boils down to. So, gentlemen, it has been a while since we've caught up over the pod waves. A lot's been going on. Let's do this. Let's start with what I would argue is the hottest topic, which is crazy because there's so many, like college sports is just ablaze with current events right now. But let's talk about the one that I think is the hottest, Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC. I mean, hey, we've got NIL, we've got a draft in July. There's a lot going on in college sports and college baseball particularly. But man, Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC is kind of like the coup de grace, I suppose. That's probably the wrong use of that phrase. Sure. But thank you. Fitzy, you'll allow it?
I think that's spot on.
Thank you. So KR, this is hitting home for you. I want to get your first takes. What do you got on Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC?
Well, I think it all boils down to obviously football. I mean, I think if you look at the landscape of college athletics, you know, what was it 3 weeks ago, you know, Mark Emmert came out saying that, you know, that he wants, you know, we're trending down a direction to where power conferences are going to have even more autonomy. We're talking about the possibility of individual sports such as baseball having a lot more autonomy moving forward. So I think the fact that this is all kind of coming to a head 2 weeks after he made all those comments kind of gives you an idea of what the thinking is here. I think if you're the Southeastern Conference and you're looking to bolster your television contract, you're moving closer to super conferences. The two most valuable available brands because of the instability in the Big 12 is Texas and Oklahoma. And so, I mean, first and foremost, that's the biggest reason why those two schools are going there. I think obviously Texas probably saw a lot of the financial success and football success that A&M probably had in the SEC and probably said, hey, you know what? If we have an opportunity to rejoin those guys in the Southeastern Conference, let's do it. I think Oklahoma, for me, is a good fit for that league. I think anybody who's ever been in Norman kind of gets the feeling that could be an SEC-esque town. But, you know, I like the move. I'll be honest. So I have two things I'm thinking about here when it comes to Texas and OU to the Southeastern Conference. I think it has ramifications in two different ways. I think from a overall college baseball perspective, I love it. I think if you look at college baseball and we are talking more and more about college baseball having more autonomy, college baseball operating, you know, as its own, as opposed to having to adhere to, you know, other legislative votes to go with college baseball, like it's kind of held the sport back for years. This is big news because guess what? If the Southeastern Conference has more and more power in college baseball, and college baseball is giving, and the NCAA is willing to give more power to these power conferences in college baseball, well, guess who benefits if the SEC is the one basically calling the shots? Mm-hmm. Everybody. Because, yeah, there people are going to say, well, the SEC is just helping itself. It's just making itself better by getting a brand like Texas in baseball and Oklahoma in baseball. But no, but what they would do is help the whole sport, because the SEC, you can bet your ass, if they get these teams, and they're going to go, hey, we want more scholarships. Like Greg Sankey has been very clear. He wants college baseball to have more scholarships sooner rather than later. He doesn't view that as a pipe dream. He views it as something that can be, you know, obtained. And when you look at the scholarship situation for the SEC, and the SEC has all this, you know, added power, and let's say there is more autonomy. Well, guess what? There is an easy combination. Softball is a big deal in the SEC, and baseball is a big deal in the SEC. So guess what? You add the same number of scholarships to both sports, everybody's happy. So I think from a college baseball perspective, just overall, you know, far reaching coast to coast, I like this move. People are going to say they don't like it. It's the SEC just conglomerating power, but I actually like it.
I like the word conglomerating. And by the way, Kendall, was that Martha buzzing in? Did Martha have a comment, or what we got there?
It was my wife buzzing in. I don't know what she maybe she wanted her take on the SEC. But, you know, the other thing I'll say here, guys, is Oklahoma better get its act together. If Oklahoma is joining the Southeastern Conference, the facility's not going to cut it. Their level of winning and commitment the last few years at the top of Joe Castiglione is not going to cut it. And so Oklahoma better get its act together, or it's going to be at the bottom of the barrel in that league. And from what I understand, they're, you know, looking in a $30 to $40 million stadium overhaul in Norman. So, you know, that'd be a huge development. Texas, obviously, they're not going to skip a beat in the SEC. It gets added value. But Oklahoma, circle those guys. They've got a lot of work to do to compete long-term in the Southeastern Conference.
But this doesn't feel like a Missouri situation. Like it felt like when Missouri was going into the SEC, it was like they have no chance to compete year after year in that league. It's like maybe once in a while they'll, you know, make a run in a regional, but like I don't think it's. I mean, Oklahoma's got so much more tradition, and their facilities are better than Missouri's considerably.
But it's not light years better.
No, it's not. It's not SEC caliber, but I mean, like it's not Missouri. And you know, weather isn't as bad as Columbia. I mean, like just the brand name, you know, for baseball, I think means more for, there's just a whole, it's not Missouri. That's not my only point that I want to make. I think they'll be fine. They need to ramp it up. But I mean, they've got tons of resources and I think they will ramp it up.
Yeah. Well, very proud athletic department, you know, like I think Missouri, it's going to sound pejorative at Missouri, but when Missouri joined the SEC, it almost felt like they were adding a designated driver, right? Like us 11 schools are going to the party, but you know, we need somebody to drive us. And, you know, Missouri, obviously they have had a nice run in baseball at times, just not in the SEC, but I'm with you, both of you guys, in that Joe Castiglione is an important athletic director for our sport of baseball, because I feel like he's not been on board, and he's so powerful that when he votes in a certain direction, that has tremendous influence. And it does feel like he's going to have to get on board, or he's going to get embarrassed in the SEC with the baseball program. And, you know, I think you can make a very cogent argument that baseball is the second most important sport in the SEC.
You absolutely could.
Yeah. And so, you know, it'll be fascinating. Fitzy, what else about this jumps out at you?
Well, I mean, I think Kendall hit on most of the big things. I mean, the main thing that I'm wondering is at some point, you know, what does the landscape look like in 5 years? I mean, is it just like one big, you know, all of the power teams are basically just like all in one, basically one deal? I mean, like, are we going to have conferences 10 years from now? I mean, seriously, like, I'm almost wondering if it's like the SEC, if it keeps growing, if it's going to be 16 teams, I mean, why not just make it 30 and have everybody spread out? And I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, it just feels like we're headed toward the haves and the have nots. That's going to be the delineation, and maybe all the other stuff, the conference affiliation stuff. I mean, is that just going the way by the wayside? I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there because it feels like at some point, what's the point? I mean, of just growing and growing and growing and gobbling up other teams. And then like everybody's just battling each other for supremacy within that one, you know, conference. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know where we're headed. I just think it's a fascinating time for college athletics, and I don't have any answers, but I think it's fun to watch.
Yeah. I will say this, and you know, there'll be plenty of people in college baseball who won't like that I'm saying this, but the more power the SEC has in college baseball, the better it is for college baseball. End of story.
I would agree with that 100%. I would say, to piggyback on Fitzy's point, it does feel so much like uncharted waters, right? Like it's just, you know, like, Jay Billis had the comment about, hey, the ACC and the SEC merging and you make it like an NFL, NBA 32 team. But then, you know, think about who you're leaving out if you do that. I mean, you're leaving out the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the Big 12. What are they going to do? And so like the whole thing. And then you've got power shifting down to the conferences. So how does that affect things? TV money seems to motivate most of the moves. So that, you know, I agree. At the end of the day, you nailed it, KR. This move is really impactful in a positive way for college baseball. I will say this. This is going to sound very hypercritical of Texas. I don't mean it this way. I just almost mean it tongue in cheek. But if you were to do a history book on the Big 12, I think you could say that the Longhorn Network totally shipwrecked the Big 12. There was no chance for that league to have a legitimate TV contract because of the Longhorn Network. And in fairness, I don't think there's a team in that league, a school in that league, that would have turned down the Sooner Network, the Cowboy Network, the Jayhawk Network, right? Like, there was too much money to pass up for someone to say no. But it is amazing, like, if you're an anti-Texas person, which I am not, I could see the vitriol because you're sitting there looking at this like, hey, your stupid network ruined our league, and now you guys are leaving the scene of the crime. You know, like,
what's really interesting to me, Runes, is when you look at the situation with Texas, is people haven't really talked about this yet, but like it's the amount of power that Texas is actually giving up to make this move that actually really fascinates me. They go from having in their own network to basically calling their own shots in that league to go into a conference where if they want to expand, they don't really give a damn what Texas thinks. They didn't care what A&M thought about Texas and OU coming to the league. So it's just interesting. You go from a school with that much power to now that school is just one of 16 teams with equal voting power. And oh, by the way, if you think the University of Florida, the University of Georgia is going to want to listen to what Texas has to say, not going to happen. So it's kind of a wake-up call for everybody in a sense. And the other thing here too is, you know, we haven't talked about this yet, but like what happens with the leftovers? You know, Texas Tech, for instance, has been an incredible baseball program the last decade and a half. I think they'll be just fine with Tim Tadlock. But let's just say Texas Tech doesn't go to the Pac-12 and they end up going to the American. Like, does that change the path that Texas Tech baseball is on? Because all of a sudden, you've got an SEC blockade of Oklahoma, Texas, Texas A&M. In Arkansas, creating a huge blockade there. So does Texas Tech have the same kind of success they've had on the recruiting trail and the evaluation trail and whatnot as they've had in the Big 12? I think there's a lot of fascinating things at play here.
Yeah.
So I haven't followed the story nearly as closely as you have, but I mean, with Texas leaving, that kind of removes the Longhorn Network obstacle. I mean, is there any chance that the Big 12 can regroup and recruit some other people, bring it back in and try to reform the league with a better TV contract?
The problem is that the payouts per team in the Big 12 were terrible to begin with, and you're getting rid of your two most valuable brands. So I don't see who you could add to the Big 12 that could bolster your TV deal. I think what the Big 12 is hoping for is, so the grant of rights, which is the TV deal they're in for football and the other sports, it expires in 25. So right now you're going to see Greg Sankey say, oh, well, these two teams will join in 2025. Well, what Texas and OU are hoping for is that the league, in order to not have the television deal canceled has to stay at eight or more teams. So if one team says they're going to the Pac-12, well, guess what? The league technically doesn't exist anymore. Texas and OU don't have to pay $160 million to leave the league. So I think what the Big 12 is hoping to do is hold things together until 2025. The problem is that if you're Texas Tech and you're Oklahoma State and the Pac-12 is looking at you, which is the case, I mean, it's everybody's talking about it, and you have an opportunity to leave, like, you're going to go to the Pac-12. Like, you're not going to just going to sit around and wait to see what the Big 12 does. So I think what OU and Texas are counting on is that they get below that 18 threshold sooner, probably rather than later.
Yeah, and it sounds like West Virginia's already got one foot out the door. Like, they've been eyeballing the ACC. That maybe is a better fit for them if the money's right. And, oh, man, I think it just takes me right back to that point from a couple moments ago is, man, like, it is so uncharted. I mean, this could go a million different directions.
I think West Virginia is a great fit for the ACC. I mean, academically, it doesn't really fit the profile of some of the schools. I mean, I would have to look at the rankings, but I have to think that Florida State and West Virginia are probably comparable academically. But, I mean, they're really good in basketball. They've had good teams in baseball. They've had good teams in football. I actually think they're a really good fit for the ACC.
Yeah. I don't know if they have enough hipster breweries, though, to fit into
the triangle. Man.
Fitzy, you may have to put bad. A subcommittee. I've not never been to Morgantown.
I haven't either.
Personal deficiency. I need to fix that.
You got to work on that.
Yes. Gentlemen, that's a good convo. I think that's a conversation that will be revisited because it's just
absolutely.
There's going to be so many changes. Let's move on to the draft. And so here's what I thought we could do with the draft. It was you know, not that long ago. It was July 11th, I believe. And so really fascinating to have a draft that late in the year. Let's do this. We'll go around the horn. I want each of us to pick one player that really stood out from the draft. You can go anywhere you want with this. And then we'll pick one team. And when we do the teams, what I really want to reference is on July 19th, Shooter Hunt did an awesome article. He called winners and it's called winners and losers, but Shooter's too good hearted for that. So he called it winners and troublesome. So no one got called a loser. They got called part of the team troublesome. So that means obviously the draft of your recruits and current players was not ideal. So let's start with the players. KR, why don't we start with you? Give me a player from the draft that really stood out for you.
You know, I'm going to go with you guys are going to be surprised here. I'm not going with a power conference guy. And I'm going to go with Trey Sweeney from Eastern Illinois going 20th overall, the Yankees. I just think when you look at college baseball, and granted, there's plenty of examples on the opposite end of the spectrum here. I just think when you look at college baseball, like that is a guy I love to showcase. Because you're talking about a kid that signed for $3 million, wasn't even on anybody's radar out of high school, you know, played at Chris Burke's high school there in Louisville. Nobody in the area recruited him. He goes off to Eastern Illinois, turns in their premier prospect, and oh, by the way, now he's a millionaire who just got drafted in the first round by the New York Yankees. So he got drafted a little higher than where we had him rated. But just to see a kid like that go ahead of the names like Jordan Wicks, go ahead of the Ryan Cusicks of the world, I thought was pretty cool. And clearly – it'll be interesting to see if he can stick at shortstop, but clearly he's a premier hitter. He can hit for a lot of power. He's physical. And I think that's great to see. We see so many kids from big schools, but to see a kid come out of EIU, I thought was neat.
Yeah. Hey, Fitzy, before you go, let me read you guys. I thought that was a huge takeaway from this draft is that, hey, part of being a part of player development is actually getting on the field, which can be challenging at some power programs. And I'm going to read you some of the colleges that had first round picks to your point, Kendall. So we've got Sam Houston State. We've got Miami of Ohio. We've got Boston College. We've got Santa Barbara. We've got Eastern Illinois, Kansas State, East Carolina, Wake Forest. You know, you just go on and on. All these schools that I'm not even going to the sandwich round, all these schools that we wouldn't necessarily consider blue bloods in college baseball, but producing, you know, multi-million dollar first round picks. It's incredible.
Yeah. And Sweeney is, I agree with Kendall, it's a fascinating pick because, you know, I kind of discovered him for me for the first time last summer in the Coastal Plain League. And it's like, all right, this guy's interesting. Like, he's big and strong. And it's like, he's kind of tearing up, you know, just okay pitching. There weren't a ton of guys like premium arms active at all in summer ball last year. is like, okay, well, I'd love to see how he does against better competition. And he didn't really get a chance to play better competition this spring. And so you're basically just drafting it. It'd be a fascinating test case in scouting, right? Because like you don't have SEC caliber competition or Cape League caliber competition to use as a barometer for this guy. You're just like, all right, we like his swing, we like his strength, this or that. But it's like, it feels like there's more risk with a pick like that. And so I'm very, very interested to see how that pans out.
Yeah. Fitzy, any another player you want to bring up here from the draft that jumps out at you?
I want to give a shout out to the short guys, Roots. We yes. had, you know, and a tip of the cap to our friends in the scouting world for, you know, realizing that we're not trying to sell jeans here, if you will. You can take a 5'9", 5'10" guy, and if he can play. You got Sal Frelick, my man, going to the Brewers, number 15 overall. You guys know how I feel about Sal. Khalil Watson, also 5'9". Very next pick goes to Miami, number 16, high school kid. Matt McClain, 5'11", right after that. And then, I know we had Tyler McDonough from NC State, one of my favorite guys, went in the third round, I believe. Mm-hmm. My man, Peyton Wilson. You know, I've been on this guy for a long time.
Seven figures. He got a mil.
5'9", 180. Pick 66, gets $1 million. So, yeah, it's just neat to see some of these smaller fellas. Connor Norby's only 5'10". Ryan Bliss, 5'9". Those are both second-round picks. So,
oh, it's so cool to see Ryan Bliss get a big number. I think he got like 1.5 or something like that, or he got a really good bonus.
What a magnetic personality. It just seems like top-shelf makeup, really fun player to watch. And he just made himself better and better. And frankly, he proved, you know, I think he proved me and David Seifert wrong also. Like we kind of just thought he profiled second base, and I wasn't sure that he had the arm strength for shortstop. But he just got himself better and better at that position, and he hit really well, and he made himself into a guy. You know, good for him.
Yeah. How about this, boy? So I'm going to give a college baseball pride point. So we're getting, today is Wednesday, and Jack Leiter is reportedly signing with the Rangers for just over $7.9 million. And so that's the fourth highest bonus all time. Oh, so I'm gonna quiz you guys. This will be fun. So, gentlemen, there's been 14 bonuses in the history of the draft, $7 million or greater. 14 times it's happened, including Jack Leiter. Guess how many of those players are college players?
How many was the total?
14 total.
I'll go 11.
11. How cool is that? And again, not trying to rip on high school players or, you know, you guys know, as a high school coach, I coached two first round picks that signed at a high school. Every individual is different, but I do think it's okay for us to be proud of college baseball, because sometimes the wrench that's thrown at college baseball is, hey, you got all the leverage if you're, you know, a high school player. And that it's almost like sometimes we get taught that the elite talents have to be high school players. Well, hey, 11 of the 14 are college players, and Jack Leiter is just another one. Jim Schlossnagel of Texas A&M now texted that out today, or tweeted that out today, which I thought was really cool. It's like he pointed to Jack Leiter's bonus and said, hey, it's really good for college baseball. And I totally agree that, you know, you can, just because you go to college doesn't mean you lose leverage or you're not talented enough to be the first pick in the draft and those types of things. And hey, you know, congratulations to the high school players that were top of the first round guys too. But you know, the college baseball wonk in me, the nerd in me, I love that. It's really cool. Hey, I'll tell you guys one more thing I'll share on the draft player wise. Boston Red Sox are fascinating right now as we come down on this bonus. The Red Sox have three unsigned players in Judd Fabian, Nathan Hickey, Nico Cavadas. And it sounds like Fabian might be going back to school. He's not even 21 yet. Remember, he entered college early. Nathan Hickey, I haven't heard anything on, but Nico Cavadas was their 11th rounder. So if they don't sign Fabian, there's probably not extras to bring into the 11th round from their draft pool. And remember, Nico Cavadas goes to a school, Notre Dame, that costs $75,000 per year. And if you're Link Jarrett, you bet your rear end that Link Jarrett has told Nico, if you come back for senior year, you won't pay a dime of that $75,000. So, you know, that makes the Red Sox $125,000. I don't know. That's pre-tax, by the way. The 75 grand is that's post-tax. I mean, there's no tax on that. So, man, I don't know, man. That one's going to be fascinating for me.
Yes, it sounded like Hickey wanted 1.5, so I'll be interested to see if he gets that. You know, Judd Fabian, you know, if he goes back for another year, would have the opportunity to play with his little brother. I was gonna mention another guy that was picked. Runes, I cannot believe you didn't bring this up, but I am gonna give a shout out to Lonnie White, who went to the Pirates in the comp round from Malvern Prep.
Just signed, yeah, 1.5 million. Yeah, go Friars. Yeah, was ironically, he's not drafted as high as Ben Davis or Josh McKinley, but got a higher bonus. And obviously his leverage with his football scholarship to Penn State probably had something to do with that. And it's I've never met Lonnie White, but by all accounts, just an unbelievable kid. And you know, that there's I think that's the reason why we say it's always about the individual family situation. Lonnie White, you know, they have a health situation. His mom has battled cancer. And so that I don't know this for a fact, but I think that's why he flipped his commitment from Clemson to Penn State to be closer to home. And so, you know, I'm sure that bonus, even though most of it's going to be deferred, is really a huge help to that family. But yeah, just an incredible, you know, three sport elite athlete. And yeah, Fitzy said it best. Go Friars. Come on, center of the universe.
One more kid I was going to bring up. It was a guy that Fit and I were both really high on. He actually ended up going way higher than we had him ranked, and I should have known better. But Reed Trimble from Southern Miss was a
He went way up there.
Signed for $800,000. But just to, you know, you talk about big things coming in smaller packages. He's only 6 foot tall, but I mean, he's got a really nice left-handed swing. He's ultra energetic, kind of a just, you know, consummate spark plug. He has power. I like that pick for the Orioles a lot. I'm a big Reed Trimble fan.
I'll tell you, Kendall, he might have left some money on the table. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, like $800,000 is a lot of money and start your pro career, and he's really talented. But, I mean, if he comes back to Southern Miss next year, I wonder if he's not, like, a top 10 pick. I mean, that dude, you're right. Like, because he really played a year of college baseball, right? Wasn't he a draft-eligible kind of second year freshman? Is that right?
Yeah, he was a COVID freshman.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I agree. Like watching him in the regional round, holy heck, like he jumped off the field like crazy.
Yeah. So, 800,000. I mean, 800,000, that range to me is difficult to turn down. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, trying to figure out what's the right amount of money, I think is just, it's such an individual decision. Yeah. You know, honestly, I think it's really boils down to how ready are you for professional baseball?
Yeah.
That's because the ultimate goal of the thing is to get to the big leagues and stay in the big leagues. But watching Reed Trimble in the regional, he sure looked ready.
And from a pure, you know, money standpoint, I mean, it's interesting. A couple of test cases from last year, I think Andrew Abbott turned down something in the neighborhood of $800,000, if I'm not mistaken, out of Virginia. And this year he signs for 1.3. But then you look at a guy like Tommy Mace. I think he cost himself some money. I think if I'm not mistaken, he might have turned down 1.5. I don't want to throw anything out. I think he turned down more than he actually got a year later. So, and you could argue, maybe did he cost himself a year of development time? I mean, I don't necessarily know, because COVID was so weird. I mean, those kids just gonna sit around, you know, training by themselves. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. That's why, to me, it's about, and again, getting to the big leagues is really hard. I think it's the hardest thing in professional sports. And, you know, if you get to the big leagues and stay for 6 years and more, your bonus money is a non-factor. But getting to the big leagues and staying for 6 years or more is tricky, tricky stuff. You know, you got to be really, really good. You got to stay healthy. I mean, man, that's a tough trip.
One other interesting thing I thought worth discussing for a second. You know, we had talked so much throughout the year of, you know, Kumar Rocker. Kind of going from, you know, 93, 96 as fastball to more. I mean, I think a couple of pitches in Omaha were like even like 89 that were fastballs. And, you know, one of the things that has come out in the last couple of days is, you know, the Mets have kind of found something in his elbow in the medical, and they're wondering at this point if they're even going to sign him. So any thoughts on that, guys? Just Kumar's situation?
I got something on that. It's funny that you bring that up, Kendall, because – you know, Kumar is as far as what I'm reading, he is represented by Scott Boras. And I didn't realize this, but this is a New York Post article. And I just did a screenshot, so I can't see who the author is, but who the writer is. But basically, Boras does his own medical testing. And so last year, he had a third rounder, Matt Allen, who the Mets took. And this is the 2019 draft, who they overpaid, high school kid. And apparently, according to the article, Boris was very upfront with people about, hey, we're seeing some stuff in this kid's arm that you know, like, you're not going to love. And so if you know, just don't mess around with them in the draft, basically, is the insinuation I got, is like, hey, if you don't like it, just don't take them, and let's not get in a bad situation here. And now Boris is disputing that there's some bad medicals for Kumar Rocker. So where he was upfront on Matt Allen, he's disputing the reading of the MRI on Kumar Rocker. So I don't know, man. If I'm the Mets, just give him the cash and get on with it. I mean, this dude's generational.
If we're talking elbow, I mean, okay, have the Tommy John. It's routine, you know, and maybe in 15 months he's back to, you know, the more electric stuff maybe that we saw, you know, a couple years ago. I mean, it's funny, like, he was awesome this year. He had a first team All-America season, great season. He didn't even have, like Kendall said, I mean, you know, his stuff was a little bit down, especially down the stretch. And it's like, are you really worried about that? If it's, let's say you do think he has to have Tommy John, it's not labrum.
Right.
You know? I mean, assuming that's what it is, from the reports that I've read, is his elbow, right? I mean, that's like, that's not a big deal anymore. I agree with you. It's a generational talent from a makeup standpoint, from a resume standpoint, physicality, pitchability. I mean, all these things, like, you're getting a top of the draft guy at a discount, even if you have to pay for it. You know, you're not paying 1-1 money for it. You're not paying him the biggest bonus in the draft. Just do it. Get it done.
Yeah, it's not worth whatever you're going to lowball him in the bonus. It's not worth it. It's just not. It's just you're tripping over dollars on the way to pennies is what you're
doing.
It's
so short-sighted. If you have a guy that could have the kind of impact in your franchise that potentially Kumar Rocker could have, I mean, you're going to try to nickel and dime him, you know, save yourself $1 million or $500,000. I mean, you're worth $1 billion as a franchise. Seriously? Like, that's what we're going to do here? I mean, I hate that mindset. I'm so tired of these short-sighted, freaking cheap-ass owners. I mean, enough of this crap. I mean, just get it done.
Yeah, it's the cheapest version of player acquisition that there is.
Exactly. Hey, can we finish this conversation on the draft with a golf clap for Matt McClain's agent? His slot value is $3.61 million, and he got $4.63 million with a slot value of $3.61. Congratulations.
Who is the agent?
It's got to be Boris, right?
No, I don't think so.
That's a good question. Yeah, we got to Google that. So
whoever his agent is, I want him negotiating for me when I buy a car again.
Yes.
No, it is Boris. I stand corrected. Tip of the cap, Scott.
Oh, there you go. Of course it is. The magician. Hey, gentlemen, so we're going to run out of time for coaching carousel stuff, but I think you guys said it before. We probably need to devote the next podcast entirely to coaching carousel, because was so juicy this offseason. I mean, Martha was working overtime. I mean, come on now. So let's do this. Let's finish with the second half of the draft topic. Again, Shooter Hunt did an amazing article on the D1 website for winners and losers in the draft. It was really detailed, players' names that you're going to want to know. It was awesome. It's July 19th if you want to find it. So let's Fitzy, why don't you kick us off? Take a team from that list. It could be the winners or the troublesome list that really jumps out at you.
Well, it's, you know, it's tricky for me because I don't know any of the high school kids. I've never seen any of them. I'm just going by what I'm reading from Shooter. And so from what I'm reading, it sounds like, you know, Arkansas had themselves a really good draft season. Which, you know, surprise, surprise. It's just like, it seems like everything's coming up Arkansas's way. But I mean, you know, you lose three guys in the top three rounds, Muncy and Drew Gray and is it Jordan Veers. You still wind up, let's see, have we checked to see if Braylon Bishop and Drake Vernado have
signed? Braylon Bishop was going to be sent to junior college, but he signed with the Pirates.
The other kid, though, it sounds like he hasn't signed yet. Verado, is that the name you mentioned there, Fitz?
Vernado, whatever. Go ahead.
So yeah, I mean that's a good get, middle of the diamond player. You know,
the Stovall kid sounds like he's Caden Wallace, right? Like he's a freshman. Right. You know, like turn the lights on and let's go.
Wallace. Or Heston Kerstad. I mean, they always get a guy like that every year. They've been getting a guy like that. He seems like he's the next one in that tradition. And you know, you got some good arms there with Hagen Smith and Brady Tigert, and some depth guys too. It sounds like Max Solis could be a real Great Hog, you know, the kind of the, maybe the successor to Casey Opitz.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really good class. I mean,
hey, and Battle's coming back and Slavin's coming back. I think, I don't know if you guys agree with this, but the Arkansas is one of those SEC programs where, I mean, it's basically you're in the big leagues, right? Like it's big league facilities, big league development. You're on TV every game. It's like, yeah, you're getting your college education, you're moving forward to your dream of being a big league player. If I'm a family of a kid, it's like who's signed at Arkansas, and I believe in my heart of hearts there's a path for me to play. You better really pay me to buy me out of that, because my kid's about to have a 3-year rock star experience.
Yeah, and also, I mean, he mentions in his piece Chase Barofin, who's transferring from Oklahoma. Our guy David Seifert has a write-up today on the Fam with Commodores that kind of highlights this guy, really a breakout star in the summer. Here's something I want to bring this something up here. Just a quick tangent, you guys. I don't know how to handle the transfer market, you know, and to say it feels uncomfortable to say such and such a program is really doing a great job on the transfer market. It's like, should we be praising that? Like, should we be praising teams for like poaching players, or like basically you're pushing out your own guys that you've been recruiting since they were in ninth grade? Like if you bring in a transfer, one of those other guys that you are recruiting is losing a spot. You know, I mean, like, I don't know that I don't know how to handle the transfer thing. To me, the whole thing feels like it's going to be uncomfortable for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, just to me, it depends on the situation that you're inheriting. And like, for instance, you know, one of the big winners for the transfer portal would be A&M, because they've got Troy Klontz, who's an all Pac-12 catcher, who's going there. They've got Jack Moss from Arizona State, Micah Dallas from Texas Tech. I mean, those are three really good pickups, but you know, you can't really blame them when it's a brand new coach for going out and finding the best available talent. But no, you're right though. I mean, in terms of established coaches and picking up transfers, yeah, it's a little bit dicey territory, kind of, you know, glorifying just, you know, pillaging the transfer portal.
It's interesting though, Kerry, you bring up those three players, and if you think about it, Mitch Canham didn't commit Klontz, right? He probably committed to Pat Casey and Nate Yeske. Jack Moss didn't commit to Willie Bloomquist. Micah Dallas, maybe hey, he gave A&M or Texas Tech three really good years, you know, like my take on it, Fitzy, and again, I'm colored by, I coached at Arizona State where we were on the front end of over recruiting, like unabashedly, very aggressive in recruiting, would always oversign and then kind of do it. But at least for me, what helped me be able to sleep at night, because it is difficult, right? Like you recruit these families for years, and then, you know, sometimes it's a very tough phone call that, hey, like this is, if you want to play, you're not going to play this year based on who just came back in this draft. You know, like we thought this player was signed and they're not. But I would say this, if the player does elect to leave, that's where it's really incumbent upon the coaches that it's not goodbye and good luck. It's, hey, we don't feel good about this. You know, clearly when we recruited you, we thought you were going to be an all Pac-12 player, but you know, you get on the phone and you start to call the schools that don't have the recruiting juice that you do. And you make sure, you know, and again, it doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it better. It's, hey, predicting your roster in the draft in college baseball is literally impossible. And only 9 kids can play. But I do think that, at least for me, like really taking an active role in making sure the kids that are leaving your program have good options. I think that, and again, Arkansas, if we're going to use them as example, hey, they should have good, you know, like the kids that Arkansas is recruiting, there's a bazillion programs that would love to have those kids. So it's tricky. It is, it reminds me of the Seinfeld episode where Jerry and Elaine get to the car rental counter, and they're like, well, we don't have a car for you. And he's like, well, but I made a reservation. And they're like, well, but we don't have a car. And they're like, Jerry's like, well, you know, you're good at taking the reservation. You're not very good at keeping the reservation. But it's tough. It is so tough.
Man. I'll say this real quick, kind of going back to the draft thing. So I didn't get chime in on that, but I'll give some props to UCLA and Texas for getting out of the draft the way they did. I think when you look at UCLA, obviously they get a nice infusion of talent with Malachi Knight taking his name out of the draft. You Cody Schreier, you have Nick McLean, all three of those guys showing up on campus. So a lot of young talent for John Savage at his disposal. And then I think you look at Texas. I mean, Texas was already going to be really good next year, but you get Ivan Melendez back, didn't sign with the Marlins. And then you get Tristan Stevens back. I mean, this is a guy that was just chomping at the bit to, you know, at least sign as a free agent. Didn't get any interest really. So he came back for another year at Texas. So all of a sudden, when you look at the horns, you know, you're getting, you know, Tanner Witt, Pete Hansen, Tristan Stevens is your week in rotation. That's a pretty good start if you're, you know, Sean Allen and David Pearson company.
Yeah, I'll give you guys two quick ones before we wrap. You know, Duke got Alex Mooney of Michigan to campus. Yeah. That was shocking. And, you know, to me, he's in the Robert Moore, Nick Madrigal, undersized, but uber athletic, very skilled, kind of life of the party player. And I mean, it's just amazing. Even like Duke was so close to not making the NCAA tournament last year, but they just figured it out. You know, it's like, boy, that the job that those guys do, Chris Pollard, Josh Jordan, I mean, that program just keeps on keeping on. And Alex Mooney making it to campus is shocking and incredible for them. I'll tell you guys a program that I'm really curious about is Texas Tech. I just feel like this offseason did not go well for them, and I can't figure it out. Now, again, Jace Young is still there, right? Brandon Birdsell, to my knowledge, is coming back. You know, Dylan Noisy, assuming he can get healthy, comes back. We know how well they recruit, although it does look like their recruits got fairly – they got picked off pretty good in the draft, it appears. Nate Rombach is transferring. I don't know. I feel unsettled about Texas Tech. I feel like it's usually they win the off season, and I feel like they didn't necessarily win the off season this year. I don't know. Is that because of the rumors that Tim Tadlock was going to A&M? I don't know. But, and again, if you made me place a wager, I would bet on Texas Tech because I'm just not in the business of betting against that staff, but it does feel like an unusual off season for them.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the Big 12 right now, like outside of Texas, like is a huge, huge question mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, Oklahoma State, I have some faith in, and it sounds like Justin Campbell's had a really nice summer. I think Aaron might have seen him or Sy saw him. But, you know, Oklahoma State has some intrigue to me. But it's like Texas. And then after that, I'm kind of scratching my head on what to expect. But I'm with you. I think Tadlock and company, they'll figure it out before the season.
Yeah, and usually they have really good players that we don't know about, and then they get there, and you're like, oh, dang, okay, of course they do. So it was weird. It's weird to see kids transfer. It was weird to see more guys drafted. But again, they always recruit depth, so it'll be fascinating. So, gentlemen, it feels good to be back on the airwaves. Well done by us. Again, thanks to our friends at Driveline Baseball for supporting us in this podcast. We will, now that vacations are over, we're starting to get in the swing of the summer. We'll get in a more regular routine on the pod here. Again, check out the website. Some really good stuff on Cape Cod, some draft analysis, a lot of really good stuff up there. Is the assistant coach piece up yet, Kendall, or not yet?
It is not up yet. I'm kind of letting some of this Cape stuff roll out, and then we'll kind of get to that. I'm thinking like next Monday on this, just kind of gives the Cape content some room. But by the way, congratulations to our coaches of the year, Link Jarrett of Notre Dame, awesome. Our head coach of the year, and then Sean Allen at the University of Texas, our assistant coach of the year. Two very, very worthy coaches there.
And if you don't think we heard it from Mississippi State fans for not having Christian Lewis coach of the year, then you don't know Mississippi State fans. And look, I mean, come on, he won the national championship. Like, obviously, he would have been a very good choice.
Yes.
He's also a preseason top 10 team, you know, loaded with talent. Like, they were supposed to be good, you know, and he did a great coaching job. Yes. But I mean, Notre Dame was picked to finish last by everybody in their division. And they won the league by 4.5 games, went to a super. And by the way, you're a cold weather private school, cost $75,000 in South Bend with terrible facilities, in a warm weather league with all these, you know, public school power. That's a tough freaking job. And to turn that program around as quick as he did, and we've talked about him a lot this year because the coaching job was incredible. He coached the hell out of that team and got the most out of them. And yes, there are a lot of good choices. I mean, Tony Vitello would have been a good choice. There's lots of good candidates, but I feel very good about the Link Jarrett choice.
Hey, Link Jarrett, he's not just coach of the year, Fitzy. I mean, that's like coach of the decade. Like, that's coach of recent memory. Like, all the data points you just – again, if somebody in the preseason had come to any of us and said, look, I need to tell you something. Notre Dame is going to win the ACC by 4.5 games and come pitches away from going to Omaha by almost winning a super regional in Starkville, Mississippi, you would have immediately taken that person's keys and put them in an Uber for, come on. Like, there's no way in heck that was going to happen.
But Runes, they didn't play Valpo 2 more games midweek, so they're clearly not for real.
Don't overlook the Crusaders, KR, the Crusaders of Northern Indiana.
Had they played the Oakland Grizzlies twice in the midweek, I would think they're more legit.
If you want to catch frostbite on a baseball field, Valpo's your place. There you go.
By the way, I don't think Limo's really worried about the coach of the year. No. He's now making $1.2 million a year. Right. So he's feeling pretty good.
I think he feels good about the other hardware he collected about a month ago. I think that's fine consolation for him.
That's right. We can make him coach of the all-fit team, maybe something like that.
There we go.
He's not exactly 6'5". So
that's right.
Yes, but congrats to Mississippi State. That was super awesome. So, gentlemen, well done. Good podcast by us. Thank you again to all the listeners. We will catch you next week. Looking forward to it. Everyone have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.